Welcome to the Contact Center Expert Show. This show is hosted by Nancy Monroe, CEO of Verbal Transactions, a voice enablement technology company. Join our discussion on how you can make your contact center a well-oiled machine.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody, and thanks for joining our show today on Contact Center Insights. Wow, okay, calm down, people. Yes, I know it's very exciting. It is exciting. They're just, oh, my gosh. Okay, enough. All right, okay. Whew. All right, everybody's comfortable now. All right, well, today I am speaking with Pat Calvert. Pat Calvert has been involved in the contact center industry for many years, and some of you may have actually been a client of Pat's or received the benefit of working with Pat, as he has done extensive networking and reaching out as an executive recruiter for call centers and contact centers. So welcome, Pat.
Oh, thank you, Nancy. Glad to join you.
Yeah, so maybe give our listeners out there a little bit of an idea of the types of clients that you work with. And I think today we're really going to talk about, you know, how to hire, you know, because of the low unemployment rate right now and the challenges that some of these call centers are facing is, you know, how to actually set your organization up to hire the right people, attract the right talent, and to keep the right talent. So why don't we just kind of start with your background a little bit?
Yeah, so my background is, as you mentioned, I've been in the contact center industry for a number of years, and I initially started off like an awful lot of people in the contact center world, as a rep right out of college kind of thing, mm-hmm. and worked my way up to management. And so I was in operations type roles for 20-plus years, ran 300, 400-seat sites. I worked for outsourcers. I worked in-house. I consulted for a while as well, right? So in mm-hmm. the last 7 years, I've really been focused and started my own recruiting company up that focuses on contact center leadership, right? So
nice.
That's what I've been doing for about the last 7 years, and really mm-hmm. getting I've been blessed with a very deep and extensive network, but I've been able to expand on that and work with a variety of companies. To answer your question, what types of clients? It's contact centers are everywhere, right? So mm-hmm. I guess I break it out into kind of the outsourcers and then the in-house stuff, but of course some companies do a little of both. But pretty much any my recruiting niche is contact center leaders, and I work across the entire United States. So even though
okay.
I'm based in Des Moines, Iowa, I'm mm-hmm. able to work between emails and phone calls and video
sure.
conferencing and all those things, right? Able to staff and put top leaders into contact centers. And I work a lot of site directors and VP of ops and those types of things, but also support roles as well, right? Workforce management, training,
mm-hmm.
quality, HR,
mm-hmm.
all those types of things. So so that's really what I focus in on, and I work across the U.S. And I look at outsourcers, I look at in-house, but pretty much anywhere that there's contact center leadership needed is the types of positions that I'll work. And, I'll tend to work at least the operations manager level and above, but tend mm-hmm. to work more on the executive side of directors and vice presidents.
Sure, sure. Well, great. So with that type of level in the organization, you know, where do you see that, let's say you've got the perfect candidate and you get them in front of a call center, you know, what's usually a situation where they're like, there's no way in heck I'd work there. what's kind of the what do you see as people saying is a deterrent for wanting to work for a certain organization?
Well, for me, it all comes back to fit, right? I just really kind of preach that with all my candidates
mm-hmm.
and of all my clients,
mm-hmm.
right? So we're always looking for the best fit. And if you're somebody that's out there looking for a new opportunity and are open to, potentially making a job change, we kind of look at the first thing being what is this job? And we look at a certain position and what's the scope of responsibilities and the scale and all those things. And that's
mm-hmm.
certainly important. So we kind of, the first level of fit, I think, is that, can I do the job? Is this the right fit for me at this point in time in my career? And then the second piece really is, and this is where it gets more complex, it's really about what's this company culture like, right? What are the
mm-hmm.
values of this
right.
place that I'm looking at? And is that going to sync up with my personal values, right? And,
yep.
Do I make a connection with my future leader? Those types of things, right? So for me, people get into situations where where they, you know, they end up unemployed through a, you know, a reorganization, a layoffs, things like that. You know, you maybe can't be as picky to find your next role, but if you can, no matter what you do, always try to look for that really good fit on those two levels that I'm talking about. And at the end of the day, you know, I've had many a candidate tell me, I'll take a lot less money than what I'm making today just because I can't stand where I'm working at my fit. Right?
No
matter how much money you're making, you know, if you have a hard time even rolling out of bed and waking up and going to work in the morning, it's not good long-term, right? So I just really emphasize that fit. And some companies are thought of more highly than others, and others might not be so, but, you know, it can be a fit for all kinds of different people depending on what they're looking for, you know.
Yeah, you know, I think people call it a toxic environment sometimes. You just got to get out of there. And do you find sometimes that when you're approaching a business to help them fill a spot, that maybe they don't have a specific culture, they don't have outlined what their value system is, and do you kind of help them define that just so that you can place the right person in there?
Well, yeah, I mean, if they really haven't defined it and thought it through, I guess I always say that they have a culture of something's there, right? Whether it's been fully defined or not, it's there, right?
Sure.
You know, people say, well, we don't really have a process. Well, you're doing something to accomplish a task. You have a process.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with culture, right? So, you know, I've talked to companies about that. That's a big part of when I partner with a company to you know, find somebody for them or to fill a role. I can find really good people. I have contacts all over the place. But at the end of the day, it's more about me learning from them about, okay, what are you really looking for here, right?
So we
initially look at the job description, and nothing against HR or any of those people that worked to put those together, but they are what they are. They're kind of dry, and this is the basics of what we need.
Yeah.
Then we go into, okay, what are you really looking for? Let's talk about personality. Let's talk about skills. Let's talk about diversity and inclusion and all those different things.
Mm-hmm.
What are you really looking for here? Because I think I can identify the top players for a certain position. If you say, I need a site director in this city, I can find you, you know, probably 10 or 20 of those people pretty quickly, but to find the right one is going to take a lot more work and a lot more effort, and it really comes down to me understanding what they need, right? So that goes back to going back to fit. I have to really understand what they are, and I encourage candidates to do the same thing when they're looking. You got to really find out what they're all about, right?
Yeah, yeah. Now, do you find that because the job market is so tight that employers are adding some kind of bonuses or some kind of other incentives? What's been kind of a creative incentive that you've seen that an employer is trying to get to win somebody over?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're starting to see more retention-type bonuses. We're definitely seeing a lot more counteroffers, right? So a lot of companies might not have everything in place that they need to for their employees, but all of a sudden they're really top players looking to leave, and they're starting to understand how much of a talent cruncher is out there, and that replacing this person is going to take an awful lot of work and time and money. And a lot of times it's easy for them just to throw them money, right? So we're seeing more counteroffers, a lot of counteroffers, right? It's really kind of happening big right now because of the talent shortage that's out there, right? In terms of attracting people and stuff, you know, their sign-on bonuses and those kinds of things. More than anything, though, I mean, there's some of, you know, hey, I'm going to be leaving this kind of stock behind. Can I get a sign-on bonus? Things like that happen. But also, you know, if we're really working the fit side of things right, people, you know, money's important to people, but especially when they're further into their career, it's certainly not the only thing that they're looking at. They don't want to take steps back, but they're also okay taking a lateral move if they believe that the next step that they're taking is going to give them more of what they're looking for in their job, either more, you know, more work-life balance, or, you know, more opportunity to grow a business, or the right kind of challenges in the business, as opposed to, you know, I've kind of pretty much done everything I can do here. There's not much more out there for me. So no matter how much money gets counteroffered in those scenarios, those things are still there no matter what. So that's kind of what we're seeing. It's certainly a lot of counteroffers. But the other piece that I would tell you, Nancy, is that the companies that get it, that understand where this labor market is right now, and they truly value people, are going to go out of their way to make their culture and to make their company you know, they're going to make sure people want to work there. They're going to treat people
right.
They're
right.
going to have that work-life balance. They're going to have extra things going on, right? So a lot of times you'll see, like, you know, your typical benefit packages and stock options or equity or bonus plans, all these things are important. But the other things, you know, I'm just seeing, you know, just extra benefits, different things that they do on their own, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm seeing a lot more of, I don't think companies call it this, but, you know, kind of unlimited PTO, right, or an open PTO thing, where there's just a lot more flexibility around that, right? Companies are getting that, right? So that's what I would say is as the talent wars battle continues and the labor shortage gets tighter, companies have to embrace that, have to understand that, and have to make sure that they're the type of place that's going to, you know, not only attract the best employees but keep them there.
Now, do you see, because another trend is virtual workforce, do you see that even in a senior position they'll allow somebody to work remote, or because of the nature of a call center you kind of want them on site?
Yeah, I we're seeing more and more of that. You're right. That's another benefit right there, right? So maybe 10 years ago, they'd require a VP to be at corporate, let's say, or be on-site in a call center. But, you know, if they're traveling 50 to 75% of the time, you know, rather than upset their life and upturn the apple cart, and they can save some money and a relo and everything anyway, just let them work virtually, right? So we're definitely seeing a lot more of that, right?
Okay.
And,
again,
I think the best companies, the smartest companies get that, and they're not going to make a, you know, big deal. But the best companies are the ones that are, hey, you know, we're going to hire you for these reasons. You do this really well. Go do it, right? We want you to hire you. Go do it. And you know, as long as you're delivering the results, they're not going to, you know, micromanage it and try to make sure that everything's being done exactly a certain way. They're going to hire you to let you go do your thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but certain positions, you know, in the contact center world, like you said, like a site director, yeah, that almost has to be on site.
They'd have to be on site.
But, you know, again, there's more flexibility around some of that stuff too, and maybe it's on site 60 or 80% of the time, right? The best companies figure that stuff out and aren't going to let the, you know, the distance between people or the lack of somebody wanting to relocate, they're not going to let them hold them back. They come up with creative solutions.
Was it when Melissa Mayer took over Yahoo, she got away with all the virtual employees.
Right.
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You're Yahoo. I mean, you're an internet company. Why would you?
Yeah, nothing against Melissa. I don't know her, but I would just totally disagree with that. Now, again, if I remember right on that, though, she was really talking about the company culture and that everybody wasn't dialed in. And I know she, so I think she had her reasons around that to really get people engaged in the culture. That's part of why you really have to build that culture up and get everybody on the same page with it and get people aligned and heading in the same direction. Then it allows you more flexibility to do all those other things, because it's not that big of a deal if I'm face to face with you in the meeting or literally overseas somewhere on a video call with y'all, right?
It's trust, you know. I mean, it's building that culture of, I trust that you're an adult, you've been in the workforce X number of years, so you've proven you can, you know, show up, you know, so I trust that you'll be at your desk or available by phone or whatever.
Right.
During the day, you know, it's just kind of a fairly simple expectation. But if the culture is, you know, we don't trust you and we want to make sure that you're clocking in, you know, between this day and or this time and this time, then, you know, it kind of starts to dilute that culture of trust. And then, you know, employees, you know, try to sidetrack that as much as they can, because it gets weary after a while.
You know, it's interesting, though, because the technology now is such that we've all got laptops and we've all got phones. And, you know, how many times are we at our activities in the evening, sporting events for our kids or whatever, and checking our email and all that stuff, right?
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Everyone tends to be fairly accessible, right? So, I think it's interesting. But you're spot on. It's you have to have that trust built within the company as part of the culture, right? And again, that's what I said. I think the best companies trust their people, hire them for the right reasons, let them go do what they need to do, reward them when they need to, discipline them when they're not doing what they need to, those things. But, the best ones are going to be upfront, transparent, open with what's going on, right?
Now, is there an average, you know, just so next, let's say I'm a call center and I know I'm going to need to fill a spot. Let's say somebody's retiring you know, what's the window of time that they should expect by the time they post the job to where they fill the spot? What's like an average time to fill that spot these days?
Well, I would say there's going to be a difference between if they try to fill it on their own with their own internal recruiting group versus, you
mm-hmm.
know, going, you know, outsourcing it to somebody or hiring
sure.
an executive recruiter like myself. From my perspective, I know how quickly I think we could turn that around in. But,
mm-hmm.
again, so much of it, I would tell you this, so much of it's going to depend on the local market and what's going on, right? So when you look at a very macro level,
mm-hmm.
across the U.S., you know, there's a labor shortage, right? In very simple terms, the baby boomers and whatnot are retiring, and there's a large number of them, and there's less, you know, people joining the workforce. So net-net, there's obviously going to be a labor shortage, and I think you see that in all the numbers that you know, the government releases. Then once you get into certain industries and you get into certain cities, you're going to have different dynamics there. A lot of it can really be driven by locally what's going on. But at the end of the day, there's a talent shortage. That's how I view it, right? There's just a talent shortage, right? So, I think so much of the dynamics, going back to your original question, so much of that depends on what market that you're in, what you're willing to pay, you know, those types of things. But from my perspective, like, if you know somebody's retiring and you put this out within your organization and start publicizing an opening for a site director, I would think that you'd be able to fill that within 45 to 60 days, right?
Oh, okay.
But again, that depends on the markets. It depends on what you're looking for. You know, if you're going to fill the position and be okay with bringing in an average person or a pretty good player,
mm-hmm.
but not a great player, that time gets sped up,
right?
All depends on your needs.
Yep.
And, you know, especially like in that particular example, if there's a contact center that's really struggling and they've been struggling for years, right? And now we're moving on to site director. We got to bring somebody else in. You're going to have the right kind of person for that role, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we just
mm-hmm.
don't want to plug in somebody that's, you know, they can do the job. Okay, great. There's a lot of people that can do the job, but how many are really good at it? And not only really good at it, but specifically have been through like a turnaround and have turned sites around before, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the types of things that you're going to want to look at, right? So, so I think so much depends on the local markets and those types of things. You know, it just depends on what's happening locally. But, you know, obviously the lower the levels, the quicker that you can fill some of those positions, the higher up you get, it's going to be a little bit more of a challenge, right? So.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I was at a conference recently where they were showing the breakdown of baby boomers versus millennial versus Gen Z or Y or whatever it is. So it was clearly that the baby boomers, the number of them is shrinking in the workforce. The next highest population is Generation X. But what we're, you know, kind of what they were saying was that people in that generation, a lot of them haven't had the length of time of experience that, say, a baby boomer or somebody at least on the top end, the older end of Generation X. So are you finding that employers are willing to take somebody that's younger, knowing they're going to have to spend a little more time to get them ramped up?
Yeah, I think so. So kind of tying into the whole labor shortage and talent shortage and all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the best companies have to really be in touch with their local market and what's going on with specific positions and the possible labor pool for that position and have flexibility around that, right? So a lot of times, you know, they'll say, okay, we need at least 10 years of experience here, and we need like 5 years of a site director experience if they want to have a site director. And, you know, as a recruiter, I'll come in and say, look, this is all nice, but are you okay if we look at 8 years overall and 2 or 3 years as a site director, right? And,
sure.
and partly
sure.
that's to expand the pool, but also you can find people that are pretty doggone good that, you know, might not quite have the number of years of experience that can go in and do that job, right? So, again, that flexibility, I think, is key, and just really staying tied into that market. And I think the same thing goes when it comes to compensation, right? And this is where I think a lot of companies are really starting to hit a crunch on, and that is you know, okay, it's going to take at least X dollars to get this person. And, oh, by the way, the other three people in that same job in my organization aren't making are making right about that amount or a little less than that, right?
Yeah.
I think there's going to be challenges for companies around that as well. So you have to maintain flexibility around that to attract the best people, but also you're going to have that natural push and pull of what are we paying internal people, you know, the people that we currently have for this role, right? And I'm starting to see a lot of that go on well. And that's a tough one. There's no easy answers on that because, you know, the easy answers to go pay everybody the same amount or more, but it's like, yeah, it's, you know, you got budgets and everything else to go into, right? So there's no easy one on that. But again, I think it's important that companies, you know, maintain that flexibility, really stay tight to the market. And the markets can change. Like a local market can change very rapidly in terms of, like, not necessarily demographics, but in terms of labor shortages and compensation, right? All of a sudden, 6 months, and you know, I was going to hire this person at this level, but now it's going to take me 10 or 15,000 more, right? That can happen pretty quickly.
Now, do you see? I mean, we're trying to get rid of this, but do you see that a woman would, for the same spot, you know, do they offer? Is she asking for the same level that a male would ask for that same position, or do you see that? Where they have the expectation that, you know, they're only going to get this or they've been paid this at their other employers, so they're only going to ask for $10,000 more, which is really $20,000 less than what a man's going to get for the same position.
Yeah, I would say I really don't see a whole lot of that. I don't see, like, much of a difference. I would say that, to kind of hit on your point, you know, a lot of companies want to know what somebody's making and then offer above that and give them a raise, but only so much. That's always a part of it, whether that's male or female. But I really don't see any differences in terms of male. And here's the other part of it. And this is maybe speaking out of turn a little bit, maybe not, but companies are really wanting to diversify. So I think right now, if female leaders – especially, but also other minority leaders have real opportunity in front of them, because I think if they're willing to work at it and get after it, there's all kinds of opportunity there. Maybe than what has been there in the past.
Okay, you heard it here from Pat, guys. This is the best time to go out and look for a job.
Well, it is, right? I mean, there's nothing. It's certainly kind of an employee market right now. But again, it always depends. It depends on your what position that you're in and what you're looking for. And at the end of the day, right, as you build and you know, work your career and kind of manage your way through things, you know, everyone looks at compensation, and that's a key part of it. But, you know, once you've – most people, and I hear this from so many candidates, once they've been in their career, you know, 15 to 20 years at least, but even 10 years, that, you know, the money's important, but, you know, it's not the only factor for sure. And they really look at – they really look at benefits, and they really look at the culture and the connections they make with their leaders. And a lot of them want to be challenged, and they want development. They want coaching, right?
Yeah.
They're looking for basic stuff too, right? So, you know, so the money is certainly part of what drives this thing, right? Basic economics is at work. But at the same point in time, really getting in tune to what people want in their next in their next career move is really kind of critical.
Well, so for my last question, because the call center itself is just – it just seems to be such an anomaly, even if you're a large employer like Microsoft or Coca-Cola or whatever, the call center seems to be kind of this thing that's off to the side. It's not seen as part of the total business. Do you find that you can bring people that don't have call center experience into a call center, or has that been a bad experience for you?
I think, a couple things on that. One, to kind of hit on your point, and then I'll answer your question. I think you're exactly right that a lot of call centers have been kind of off to the side and maybe not fully integrated into the overall company business or mission, right? And the good thing I'm seeing to kind of counteract that, because I think that's a bad thing, and the reason I think it's a bad thing is, number one, every employee should feel they're part of the overall company and should feel part of something special. But the other part is, you know, they're really missing out on a good chunk of the customer experience. And the good thing that I'm seeing now is companies are starting to really understand or starting to want to understand customer experience, and they have developed, you know, jobs and even full departments and even C-level, you know, positions around customer experience. And the call center isn't the whole thing, but it's a big chunk of it. So if you want to know what's going on in your call, what's going on with your customer base, go listen to some calls and go talk to the reps, especially on the phone, and be open and honest, because they'll be very open and honest with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
So I think that's certainly been a trend in the past. I see that slowly but surely kind of changing, but
okay.
I think companies would be wise to integrate call centers more, right?
Yeah,
so,
totally.
And what was your original question then? I'm sorry, I forgot.
So, have you recruited people that weren't from a call center
and found that
not a good fit?
Well, it just depends. Again, it depends on the culture within those call centers. But I can tell you in general, the experience has been because call centers are just so different, and I just
mm-hmm.
use the word chaotic. They're just really a different thing, and everybody I've ever talked to that's ever been in agrees with me. You know, it's not easy to adapt to that sort of a culture, and I've seen really good mm-hmm. people, really good operations leaders, HR people, other sort of positions people that had really very successful careers until they get, outside of call centers, get into a call center, and they struggle. And it's definitely, people intensive, lots of stress, there's lots of things that we know go on in those places. So I'm not saying it can't happen, but the track record hasn't been great on a lot of those people coming in, right? So, and so many people have kind of grown up in call centers, right? They start off on the phones
mm-hmm.
and they start working their way
mm-hmm.
and they like it and they thrive in that environment, and it's just different. So I'm not saying you can't do it, but you really got to make sure that you set them up for success and you help them understand the culture and really understand what they're getting into from the get-go, right? A lot of times when companies are trying to hire somebody, they want to kind of paint the rosiest picture they can, and so they bring somebody in, they tour them, and everything looks great from the outside, but
mm-hmm.
In reality, there's going to be three big things that are going on that might just drive them nuts, right? Be up front, tell them that's what you're getting, is everything.
Yeah.
Here's the issues, here's the things that we're going to want you to work on, how do you go about working on some of these things, right? So you be as transparent as you can, so you know that 6 months later you don't have to turn around and go hire the same person or same position to fill it again, right? So,
exactly.
Contact centers are just a different beast. They've always been that way,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
It's interesting to watch people try to adapt to them. So it certainly can be done, but it's a struggle a lot of times for some really good people,
I'm not surprised by that, but so just for our listeners out there, any words of wisdom or any nugget that, you might want to share with them to help them either retain or attract, an executive within their organization? What would be kind of the pointers there?
Yeah, probably just the biggest thing, I'll say it again, is just really understand what's going on in the talent market, right? And it's
mm-hmm.
easy. It's easy to just get so consumed by your day-to-day job. I get it. I've been there. But understand the dynamics. And if you truly care about people, and at the end of the day, my belief is that, people are the key to success for any business, right? You can have great products, great systems and technology, great processes. All that stuff is needed. But at the end of the day, if you don't have really good people running and executing all that stuff, it's not
mm-hmm.
going to add up. It's not going to work for you in the end, right? So my opinion is every business needs to be dialed into their people, what's going on in the labor markets, and understanding that. And not like you have to be cutting edge on everything. Just be plugged into it. Be aware of what's going on. Understand your local markets, but also understand try to understand the higher levels as you get up and what's going on, the different dynamics there. And so that's probably the biggest thing, is just stay in touch with that. Don't lose sight of that. If you value people, you have to really know what's going on, and you have to set your people up for success. And like we talked about, attracting the best people and retaining them, right? So just that's the first
mm-hmm.
thing, is just really, that's what I'd say, just be really in touch with that and learn as much as you can as you go through it, because ultimately, at the end of the day, your people are going to drive your success or failure.
Yeah, totally. I completely agree, and I think our audience probably agrees with you as well.
There you go.
Fantastic advice. Oh, my gosh. I can't get enough of you. Well, Pat, thank you for joining me today, and I look forward to running into you at some of these events in the future or in Des Moines the next time I visit. So, thank you for joining us, and really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Nancy. Thank you very much for having me on. Take care.
All right. You bet. Bye.
Bye-bye.